Hey friends, Devin again for the Bardic Babble podcast. On today's episode, we are joined by Joseph Carruthers, a personal colleague of mine. Joe and I dive into his personal journey from Overwatch shoutcaster to a full-time content creator on Twitch. Joe works with Red Sky City, a cyberpunk RPG setting, and Rulebook, as well as D&D 5e over on Casters and Castles. So make sure to stay tuned after the sponsored break to dive into it with Joe and I. Oh, and before I forget, don't forget to vote. Welcome back, listeners. Today I have Joseph Carruthers, the DM over at Casters and Castles, as well as Red Sky City. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Little hot today, but doing well otherwise.
Whenever we say doing well, it always applies to the immediate stuff we are working on in this exact moment, not, you know, pay no attention to what lies beyond this chamber.
Yeah, exactly. So we can just dive right into yourself, who you are, and a little bit of your project, and we'll just let the motion take us.
So, as said earlier, I'm Joseph Carruthers. I've been a DM for somewhere around 23 years. It's not the longest tenure in the hobby, obviously. I learned it from somewhere. But I've been a dedicated DM for most of my life. I got my start in content creation after I broke into the esports industry. So I used to work a desk job in finance and technology. I ended up moving into esports. I was very passionate about tabletop stuff there. Everyone always knew me as the Dungeons and Dragons guy. So when a couple of the talent for the show that I worked on, the on-screen talent, they wanted to do some D&D content, but they didn't have the time to write up a campaign. And I'd been loud enough, and I knew them just well enough for them to say, hey, you're good at this stuff. You like this stuff. Would you write a campaign for us? So I came on board and we pitched it as Casters and Castles, which was an idea that we'd been working on for a while. I always wanted to get a lot of the esports community. There's a lot of charismatic talent for the on-screen stuff in esports. So I've always wanted to do something with them. When the opportunity presented itself, we already had a name. We already had a brand idea ready to go. So for the first season of that show, just over a year ago now, I was behind the scenes. I was writing all the adventures, but my buddy Bren was doing the DMing along with the cast. For the second season, they brought me in as the on-camera dungeon master, and I've been doing it ever since.
Very cool. So now you also work on Do Not Peek Entertainment, Red Sky City. Do you want to chat about that real fast?
So I worked with Jason, who's one of the founders of Do Not Peek. He was when I got my start in esports, I worked with him there, and he ended up leaving the company that I was with at the time, but we stayed in touch. I enjoyed working with him back in the day. He knew that I have a professional take on project management and getting things done. And he'd wanted Do Not Peek is sort of a content production studio. They can white label projects, mostly for esports events, etc. They have a ton of knowledge about production, esports. They've got their own studio. And they've been sort of looking for different things to do. And they used to be involved in the space behind the scenes, helping out with some tabletop show production. But then the show that they were working with fell through and they wanted to get back into the space. Jason knew me for a while. So as soon as I announced that I was looking for freelance work, he already had an idea. After all the delays that hit Cyberpunk 2077, between it just being a behemoth of a game, plus, you know, the world environment not being particularly kind to game developers at the moment, he's been just hankering for that game, right? Just chomping at the bit to get into that world of the Cyberpunk universe. And he knew that there was a Cyberpunk tabletop RPG. In fact, that's what came before Cyberpunk 2077. It's based on an RPG that started in, it's just called Cyberpunk. It came out in 1987, Cyberpunk 2013. And then as time has marched on, they've moved up the timeline. So the last edition of the game was Cyberpunk 2020. The newest edition of the game, which is forthcoming, which is what we're playing right now, is set in the year 2045. And obviously the video game is set in the year 2077. So they were looking to create some tabletop content on their channel. They were looking to get their fix of cyberpunk dystopian content. And they already knew me. They liked working with me. In addition, they liked the cast that I was working with, the main cast for Casters and Castles. We all know each other. We've all worked together. So essentially they approached me, said, hey, we want to do a cyberpunk show. Who can you bring with you from your show? We'll put them together. We'll get some other industry talent in there from the esports community, and we'll get this thing going. So our cast includes Brennan Sideshow from the Overwatch League, among other things. They're some of my mainstays, my co-founders of Casters and Castles. We've got Rachel, aka Seltzer, who's absolutely phenomenal in the hosting role throughout the Pokemon community and a bunch of other esports stuff. And we have global icon and national treasure, Golden Boy, who, among other things, you know, he's got Titan Games with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, which is neat.
Neat. That is a word for it. That's really cool. So how did you get into the esports scene? How did you break into that?
So I was working in finance and technology. I was in there for 7 years. I want to say, 7 years. And my buddies and I, when Overwatch came out, I was never really super into esports. I've been playing games all my life, but who hasn't? And playing games with new people, but also sort of the same core of friends since childhood. We all played a bunch of Blizzard games. So when Overwatch was announced, the trailer looked phenomenal. It looked like a Pixar battle game. We all sort of looked at each other and said, yeah, this is the game we're going to play. We are all going to play this game. And then the game came out and I got everybody together and I said, let's make a team. We all suck, but let's form a team. Let's compete. Let's find a league to compete in. Just buddies, right? Like a dad league, basically. Parks and Rec stuff. So we formed up. We started practicing. We had nowhere to compete. I ended up discovering an amateur league that existed. I got heavily involved with that. I got our team in. We slaughtered everybody in our very... We were the biggest fish in a tiny, tiny pond. That league was broken up by skill levels. Our skill level was not good, but we took it way too seriously. We did, you know, charts and strategy meetings. We researched the enemy team before every match to see what their favorite team compositions were. We scoured YouTube to see if they had any VODs of their gameplay that so we could review their tape. We were having a lot of fun being too hardcore for our pathetic skill rating. But I got more and more involved in the admin side of running that amateur league. I started just helping out. Then I started being one of the tournament organizers. One thing led to another, and I was running the whole damn thing with a couple of other talented, dedicated folks. And from there, I was getting more and more involved with that. I started going to the broadcast side of things. We were streaming our tournaments. We had commentary. We had a coaching division building up all this stuff. And it just came from wanting a place to play organized with my friends. And then I lost my job in finance and I told my wife, give me 6 months. I've got reserves. Give me 6 months to see if I can make something happen in esports. Because by that time, just by virtue of running an amateur organization, I'd been more and more exposed to the actual professional scene. And I started to build up some skill sets for coordinating and marketing and, you know, tournament organization, stuff that was semi-applicable. So I said, yeah, give me like 6 months. Let me try to break into the scene. And if I don't, I'll go back to a grown-up job. And I was puttering around, doing a little bit of streaming, a little bit of this and that here and there. And I was involved with a lot of the amateur esports production, so event production community, specifically a group called Broadcast GG, which is where a lot of people got their start now that are now casters and observers and other things in the scene. And I was friends with the founder. We actually met at a Overwatch World Cup event and sort of brainstormed his brainchild, which is Broadcast GG, that he brought to life, this community for broadcasters. And so I was sitting around in San Diego, figuring out what I was going to do with my life, when somebody from Blizzard posted in the Overwatch, in the broadcast.gg Discord server. They needed somebody that day to do observing for a college tournament. And I kind of knew what I was doing. Observing wasn't my specialty. For those of you who aren't familiar, observing is virtual camera work. Just like in sports broadcasting, you have to have somebody operating the camera on the sideline to follow the sports ball. In esports, you have to have somebody in the game who's spectating or observing. So I knew just enough to be dangerous. Most importantly, I had a car and I could get there in time. So I made a couple of phone calls, hopped in the shower, jumped in the car, drove up to LA, did the gig. They liked me. They started bringing me back once. So 2 nights a week, I would drive up to LA, stay there for the night and then come back down just to do this Overwatch college tournament. Ultimately, the Overwatch League got launched. I already knew some people. They decided to bring me in to run the instant replays, and the rest is history.
Very cool. So having that experience now, I mean, you did it for a good amount of time. Do you feel like there's a one-to-one translation from esports and shoutcasting and everything like that into being a live stream DM?
There's a lot of synergy between the two. I learned a lot about event broadcasting, you know, ye old OBS overlays and stuff, but a little bit of audio engineering and how to create a run of show and how to market a show that you're working on. I just got to work as part of this huge operation with all these different skill sets, and it all sort of rubbed off on me. So being in a live production broadcast setting gave me a lot of the tools when it comes to running a stream, not just turning on the stream and playing the video games and talking to chat, but overall, a lot of the other production marketing side of things. So that was a natural fit. The other thing was making new contacts and new friends, because esports requires, I know, you know, there's obviously a stereotype about sweaty gamers playing the video games, clicking on people's heads and stuff, but there's a lot of charismatic people in esports, and you have to have on-screen talent to bring the excitement and bring the hype. And anybody who already has that skill set is going to be a natural fit for being entertaining in a content-focused campaign. Because I think, especially now in the COVID times, everybody who plays has thought about streaming their game at some point, just their game with their friends, right? Just turn it into something. And the market is so saturated in the actual play space that these days I feel like you have to be exceptional. And you have to have some sort of shtick in order to stand out. So our shtick is we have these esports personalities who come to the scene with their own viewer bases. They already have their own communities. They're all funny people. They're all charismatic people. They're used to being on stage. They're used to improv and bouncing off of each other because they're not actors. They're on-camera talent who have to react live to the games that are going on. So they already have the force of personality. They already have a lot of the skill set. You get a group of them together that create some really wild, fun characters, and it's just going to be a blast. So I think those are the main areas where you've got crossover between the two.
Nice. You've mentioned learning a lot of different skill sets. I also see just skimming your Casters and Castles Twitch. You utilize a lot of tools, World Anvil and stuff like that. When you were starting to put both shows together, was there any, like, how far outside of your comfort zone did you go reaching and researching?
I honestly think the most difficult thing for me are the nitty gritty aspects of broadcast engineering. You know, getting your sound right, getting your video right, running all the overlays. Because when I run my shows, I do all the production myself. So I'm DMing, I'm producing, switching the overlays, playing the video intros, running ads, all that stuff. And that tends to be where I struggle most, because the instinct as the GM, every GM out there knows that at the table, you are juggling a million plates at a time. So not only am I trying to remember my content, trying to remember all the rules that I've got in place, trying to make sure that the encounter goes right, and I don't forget about that hidden enemy who they haven't detected, who's supposed to ambush them, make sure that I get that important little bit of foreshadowing in there that doesn't matter much. I just need to weave it into my intro a little bit, but I got to drop it, or otherwise the plot twist in the next episode won't have the same impact. Got to figure out what all the players did. I didn't look at their character sheets after they leveled up, so I've got to make sure, you know, have to take into account all their new stuff, plus the fact that these are very unpredictable players, which is part of where the fun comes from. So the standard GM work of, okay, my players just decided to cast a gate spell and summon the most powerful dragon from before the world that they met earlier, who I didn't even think of that happening. Like, how am I going to deal with that on the fly? Plus making sure that the audio sounds good and the green screen isn't glitching out. It's really balancing all of that tends to be the biggest place where I'm out of my comfort zone. Because when it comes to a lot of the other tools, the world building aspect, the, you know, the story planning, the combining rails and sandbox together to create this live experience, even the aspect where when you're running a game as content, you do a lot of things differently than you do when you're just running a game at your table. And I actually think that running content has made me a better GM overall, because you have to control the pacing differently. But that's something that I feel comfortable with. I can slip into the GM role and I will always feel confident and comfortable, because even if I don't have anything prepared, I've got years of experience. I can always just ad lib an encounter I ran with a different party 5 years ago. So it's managing all of that plus watching chat and doing all the technical stuff. That's the biggest challenge for me.
So I'm going to take it you're like a hyper extrovert.
No, absolutely not.
Really?
Absolutely not. Yeah.
So with all the combined stresses and dealing with a very dynamic cast, are you drained? Are you exhausted when you get done with the session, or, you know, how you feel?
A little bit. For me, it's not a casual conversation. It's a place where I am very comfortable and confident. I know I've got a little bit of stage experience, a little bit of singing experience. What also helped was I worked at Disneyland as a cast member for a while.
Who were you?
So they're all called cast members, from the janitorial staff to the person who,
oh, really?
Who quote, works with, end quote, Mickey, right? That's part of the, as part of the whole aesthetic of Disneyland, is everyone's putting on a show no matter what role you play, right?
Oh, that sounds exhausting.
Specifically, I was a ride operator on Star Tours before they overhauled it.
Oh, that's cool. That's fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But it teaches you to work a crowd. Even if All you're doing to work that crowd is saying, please move all the way through the walkway. No stopping at this time. Thank you. The nearest restrooms are on the left past that hut. Thank you very much. Like That alone, it's very different experience being on camera, being at the nexus of all these lines, controlling the theater, putting on a show versus just hanging out at a party. It's a totally different energy. So I thrive on it.
Oh, okay. So when you were starting to put just the big shows together, we'll go with Red Sky as my example here. How did you seek out the cast members that you wanted on the show? And then the follow-up to that is, how is it having them on the show, as you mentioned, unpredictable as they can be?
In terms of picking our cast, for Red Sky City, because it came after the success of Casters and Castles, half of my cast came directly from that show. So I've been working with them for a couple of years as their dungeon master, as their friend, as their co-owner on the project. So I've got a great working relationship with them. They already had a demonstrated product. Their on-camera chemistry is great. They're a casting pair. They work together. So that was a no-brainer. I also didn't have I wasn't the only voice when it came to casting that show, because it was being put on by the studio. And they have a lot of contacts in the esports space, and they wanted the best of the best who they could get. So again, I have not worked with Seltzer before, but I was familiar with her work. The studio had contact with her. They brought her in. She's been absolutely fantastic. Her character is so, so much fun. And she absolutely holds her own with the whole group. Golden Boy worked in the Overwatch League for a while, so I've met him. I knew him from around the studio. And I brought him on. One of the things I do on Casters and Castles, in addition to our main shows, is I do one-shots with guest stars, usually from the esports community, sometimes from the tabletop community. And it's great because I get to run these little quick fun adventures. I get to bring in people who I otherwise haven't worked with. It's oftentimes people's first exposure to D&D. So Golden Boy, I don't think he'd played, or he hadn't played much, but I brought him on along with Brandon Cutler to do a wrestling themed episode of Tales from the Golden Bower one-shot show. So we had the Doton's Rock Rumble, which was a lot of fun. So he'd already played, he'd already gotten a taste, and I knew what he was like at my table. And of course, Do Not Peek already knew him, had a great working relationship with him as well. So those all sort of came together to bring him onto the show. It's usually a combination. I try to spread a wide net and work with as many different people as possible, so that when it comes to casting, I have a wide selection of people who I don't just think are good, but I know are good because I've had them at my table before. They were energetic. They were considerate. They added to the group dynamic. They were funny. So the more people I can bring in as guest stars, the bigger talent pool I have to personally draw from. And like I said, Do Not Peek had their own talent pool in mind and great relationships across the industry, which really helped. As for dealing with them at the table, so no plan survives contact with the enemy. And as the dungeon master, I think that some of the most common wisdom you see on the DM Academy subreddit and other communities is to prepare situations, not outcomes. Never prepare outcomes, prepare situations. be familiar with all the elements in a scene and how they work together and what their interactions are and what their relationships are and what their capabilities are. When you write an NPC, make sure you know what that NPC wants and what they don't want, so that when the players do something completely out of left field, you can reasonably come up with a way that they would respond. Be prepared. Like, some of my favorite moments from any campaign I've ever run have been when my players have learned the rules of the world I've set before them and come up with something I never would have imagined, but works according to those rules. So I think that that mostly comes from just lots of experience being a DM, being comfortable with things going completely, completely off script.
Have you run into any kind of scheduling issues with these, with your cast members being talent abroad?
Yeah, absolutely. The first season or two of Casters and Castles was a scheduling nightmare. We were all over the place. We tried to have a set date, but it just kept, people kept missing, people kept being busy, people kept not being able to make it. And over time, part of it is that early on in the project, Casters and Castles started out with no budget. And it's still, it's all powered by subscriptions. So it's not like we can say, hey, you know, potential talent, here's a decent paycheck. It has to be people who are interested in working for a fair share of what everyone else is getting. But if someone has a paying gig, I'm never going to complain about them missing my show, right? It's like, you know, go get paid, please, by all means, get the bread. Now, in subsequent seasons, it's been a lot easier because we went online because, you know, the COVID times happened and people's schedules have been a lot more flexible. But there is always the problem that the more successful your cast is, the more scheduling conflicts they're likely to have. The trick there is always to have a roster of guest stars ready to step in.
Nice. So as we continue to hurdle through 2020 and already looking into 2021, the ease of access of a lot of the tools and the barrier of entry of creating this content, and you mentioned, you know, everybody already has a game, why not create it, a Twitch show? Do you see, I do D&D in air quotes because there's so many tabletop RPG systems.
Right.
D&D is a catch-all. Do you see it becoming more mainstream? Do you eventually see it on TNT, TBS, or something like that outside of the Twitch sphere?
I think you're likely to get themed content around it, but I don't think you're going to see actual play. Just make it as a one-to-one translation to mainstream media. More likely, you would get a show, like you'd get a show about fictional players in a fictional campaign, a scripted show that might involve some improv elements. And you'd probably do the thing like the gamers did, where you show them at the table, but then you also show the fantasy world, you know, right, with costumes and all that stuff. I could see something like that going through. I have heard really, really good things about Dimension 20.
Yes.
Which, yeah, Dimension 20 is sort of leading in terms of heavily edited, curated actual play. And in order to make the jump to get White's Dream buy-in, that's the sort of thing that you need. Every time somebody stops to look something up in a rule book, every time that people spend 10 minutes shopping for items, you are shifting away from a large demographic to a niche demographic. So the more curated, and I hesitate to say scripted, but more bounded and directed your content becomes, the more you can focus on just the good stuff, just the things that are going to be super engaging, and that's going to break into your wider audience. So if it makes the jump, it's going to be in that edited, curated format.
Sure, I get you. Harmon Quest. I don't know if that's still a thing, but
yes,
that was another good example. As a content creator in you know, multiple avenues and fields, what is just that cherry on top of the entire sundae of your planning, your editing, your researching, setting up your soundboard, and then, you know, what is that nice little cherry at the end of a production day for you?
My favorite thing is, one, at the end of the game, I want everyone to say great game, because these are all, you know, talented, accomplished people who know a good entertainment experience when they see one. So if my cast had fun and let me know, that always feels good. But one of my, you know, I don't want to say guilty pleasures, when I was brought on to Casters and Castles, they basically said, whatever you write, whatever you create, we'll go with. So naturally, I was like, well, I got this homebrew world that's, you know, my special baby. That's coming along with me. So it's been super gratifying to see not just the cast and the show and the story, but the world itself that I've been creating for many, many years, developing its own fan base within the show's fan base. When I drop a name on the stream and chat pops off because they know who that is and they know the significance of that, or when they start theory crafting about it, like, that makes me feel warm and fuzzy. That's 100% my favorite little treat.
That's awesome. So what kind of interactive elements, if any, do you incorporate into your shows?
For Casters and Castles, we have the Act of God system, which has wrought absolute havoc on the campaign, and it's one of our defining features. Essentially, every 10 subscriptions during a show, a new Act of God is triggered. And it's gone through a couple of different forms, but right now the form is I have a deck of digital cards representing the various gods of my pantheon. And there's a deck for 10 subs, 20 subs, 30 subs, 40 subs, and 50 subs. So whenever 10 subscriptions hits during an episode, everyone in the party rolls, and the highest or lowest, you know, whoever we feel like, draws from the deck, and something happens in the game. The gods of the world meddle with it. And it goes all the way from like a small, you know, maybe you trip on your face, maybe you find some extra treasure, maybe you temporarily can smite, all the way up to absolutely game-changing gods descending upon you, ancient forces being unleashed. We've had episodes where chat sabotaged us so hard that we barely made it through any of the content that I wrote because the party was just dealing with all these cosmic forces meddling with them. We've had the party just randomly get plane shifted into the Feywild and had to find their way back. We even had, in a very clever sequence of events, one of my players used an act of God to bring back his previous character who blew himself up. And that's going to completely just wreak havoc on the world. So the Act of God system is one of our biggest defining characteristics for Casters and Castles. We use the Act of God on our mainline streams, our biggest streams. We also run a number of smaller shows. I have a campaign that's literally just me and my friends that we're only running because we started back when we didn't have a lot going on in the channel. And I was like, hey, I'm just going to play this with my friends. And my co-runners on the channel just said, hey, stream it. Who cares? Like, just get more stuff out there. So it's just a small Descending to Avernus campaign with my buddies. But in those ones, we let the audience meddle by using viewer points, channel points, just for watching. They can do things like give advantage, give disadvantage, name things, hand out treasure, healing boosts, stuff like that. And it really helps the community get involved and engaged and have fun. And it's been super fun because we've been running some community games recently for our subscribers. And they're usually the ones who, Darius Ravengard is playing. He's one of the cast members. I'm just going to screw him. Like, I'm saving up all my points so that as soon as, you know, he starts rolling dice, he won't have a single roll without disadvantage the whole session. Well, they go on these community games and the same rules apply and they get dunked on in return. And they actually have a lot of fun with it.
That's cool. Piggyback on the community games. How do you establish those? Like, what? How do you pick the community members for those?
Right now it's pretty simple. We have a Discord channel on our server that's only for subscribers. I just say, hey, I want to run a community game. Here's my time slot. First four people to say they're interested, I'll put you in.
Oh, cool.
We've only done a couple of them so far, and it's pretty casual at the moment.
Cool. So other than Red Sky, do you primarily use 5e?
Yes. I'm most familiar with 5e. I've played some other rule systems before. Learning the Cyberpunk Red rule set was part of the initial challenge of picking that up. I played a little bit of Fate, but I definitely am not proficient in it at the moment. I've played some PDQ Sharp, which is a smaller system that I really like. It's more narrative focused. I've stolen some ideas from that, you know, like all GMs do. I played 3.5 for years and years and years. I spent most of my money in high school and college on 3.5 splat books. That was my bread and butter for the longest time. I'm trying to think what else I've played. It's mostly been D20 system stuff. You know, I started with second edition D&D. And then during the 3.5 era, they had a bunch of variations. You had D20 Modern, you had D20 Past, you had superhero mods of it and right. All sorts of stuff. But it was all the same essential system.
So when it comes to especially live stream shows, I mean, D&D, it's the titan of the industry. It's very recognizable. It's borderline a in every home kind of a game. Have you run into any hurdles, complications with the cyberpunk system and the audience knowing and understanding the rules? Because one of the biggest draws of watching a D&D show is I can go grab my PHB and be like, oh, well, technically, but, you know, in all practicality, it's you can understand the rules where, you know, I don't know how wide cyberpunk goes in familiarity.
It has its upsides and downsides. Downsides are you don't have that immediate plug-in audience. The Twitch support is not fully there for other systems. Like if you stream under the Dungeons and Dragons category, it's likely that somebody's going to stumble across you. But and there's a tabletop games category, but I don't know how widely that's used. And then the more niche you get, the less likely it is that streaming in that category is going to get a large viewer base. It might find the people, the few people desperate to watch that sort of content, which is great, but you're not going to catch any more curious eyeballs that way. So the juggernaut of D&D, like on the one hand, you have to avoid Thursday night like the plague.
Yes.
But on the other, it's the forbidden time slot. But on the other hand, having a smaller game that's less well known brings in some curiosity, especially from people who are already familiar with your talent. And that's why I think that Dungeons and Dragons as a brand, you can't just exist and be like, I do D&D stuff. You have to have, you know, a niche, a personality or group of personalities that are captivating or interesting in some capacity, because that's more important. If you have that, and you're playing some of the rule system, there's a certain degree to which it doesn't matter. Like if you're going to have a small, obscure cast who doesn't have a lot of credits to the name, it doesn't have a lot of reach, playing a small, obscure game system, then unless you're working directly with the publisher, you have some sort of leg up, it's going to be really hard to get any sort of eyeballs on your product. Whereas if you have, you know, some folks who have a little bit of reach and you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, your discoverability might be better. But if you have people who have good reach in the first place and an obscure and interesting game system, then I think that's a nice place to be, because you can be that gateway for people into these alternate systems, which I think is important for the health of the ecosystem without, you know, flailing in obscurity.
Right. That makes sense. So what really defines the cyberpunk system? Is it a D20? Like, how does it operate?
It uses D6s and D10s exclusively. The skill rolls are all based on a D10. The core mechanic is fairly similar. You roll a number, you roll a dice, you add modifiers from stats, equipments, and situations. You attempt to beat a target number. Fundamentally, it's not that different doing it with a D20 versus a D10, except that your math is going to be different. You're going to have some different bounded accuracy. The turns are smaller. They're 3-second turns instead of 6-second turns, and the game is much more lethal. And armor absorbs damage instead of making you harder to hit. Cover is incredibly important. Most of the time when you're shooting at somebody with a weapon, it's all about range. It doesn't really matter. Like, you don't have to hit their armor class. You're just saying, oh, I'm using this type of weapon at this range. Here's what I have to roll to hit, unless they're fast enough to dodge bullets. And again, it's highly lethal. We had somebody die in the first encounter of the game.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And there isn't the magic element. Like, yeah, there's cyberpunk technology and the whole installing more gear at the loss of your humanity. So there's a certain degree of we can cheat death, but like when you're dead, you're dead. There's no magic to bring you back.
That's cool. I like that. What are you running plot-wise through Red Sky right now?
So I started out, what was available to us when we started the show was the Jumpstart Kit, which is a beta available through our Talisorian Games, the publisher. And Cyberpunk Red has been in a pretty serious state of delay for a while due to a number of factors. Mostly, they don't want to screw over their brick and mortar publishing partners, small, friendly local game stores and stuff. So, and that whole supply chain has been massively impacted by the worldwide crisis. So rather than release the PDF ahead of time, they wanted to protect those relationships and, you know, foster the local gaming community by holding off until they could actually publish hardcover and PDF at the same time, which frankly, I respect.
Agreed.
You know, they're protecting livelihoods, protecting an important part of our culture. Big ups for that. But we started out with that, and that packet came with an adventure, just like a starter adventure, the default, your Minds of Phandelver sort of thing.
Sure.
And I took that, but I already had a plot hook in mind. And the idea was not to be a prequel to the 2077 game, but to show people how the 2077 game is part of this larger universe. Because I think that there's a decent proportion of people who are excited for Cyberpunk 2077 who have no idea that it's based on a tabletop RPG and who have no idea that that tabletop RPG has a ton of lore
right
behind it. And that if you're familiar with that lore, then you start watching things and being like, so you watch the 2077 thing and Keanu Reeves in it. And you're like, wow, that's really cool. Keanu Reeves is going to be in this video game. Then you read the backstory and you go, oh my God, Keanu Reeves is playing Johnny Silverhand. And that's a huge deal because he did this, 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 and this. There's this huge, you know, he's an incredibly important character with a lot of history. And that history is out there. And so you can do that thing where when the movie's coming up, you know, when the comic book movie is coming up and the Marvel DC movie is coming up and everyone's like, wow, this looks cool. I haven't heard of this, but I'm excited for it. But you've read all the comics, so you can either share all the cool stuff with your friends if they want to hear it, or you can just be there like, oh my God, fan service. Like there's all this little fan service in there that, you know, flies over their head, even though they still get to enjoy the movie.
Right.
So I wanted to draw upon that bank of lore while also in the backstory, explain sort of how we're going to be where we end up in 2077 and tie into some of those key lore factors. So Johnny Silverhand has an important presence in our story. The events of the Fourth Corporate War, which presage Cyberpunk Red and will play into the major players of Cyberpunk 2077, have an important place in our story. I think, I don't want to drop any spoilers from either side, I think one of the central plot devices of my story might appear in the upcoming game as well. Specifically when Keanu in the trailer says, wake up, samurai, we've got a city to burn. I have an idea of how he's going to go about doing that burning. And I'm using that plot device in my story. The other thing, though, aside from I have this idea, I use this starter adventure, I threw more elements in it, and I came up with this whole campaign, is the Cyberpunk system has a really great engine for character creation. Fifth edition leans into this a little bit, but only if you have supplements like Xanathar's Guide to Everything. Xanathar's Guide has a whole section in it called This Is Your Life that can flesh out your backstory and what's happened to you so far and a bunch of great, great details. Well, Cyberpunk includes that hard-coded into the system. And in the previous edition of the game, Cyberpunk 2020, you would roll to see how old your character was. And then for every year past the age 16, with like a maximum of 12, you would literally roll on a huge pile of random tables to see what happened to you that year. And so you could end up with, you know, how many siblings do I have? How do I feel about them? What's the situation of my family right now? What disasters have I had? Have I had any, you know, unfortunate love affairs? And so we did a live session zero for this campaign where we used the old rule system for 2020 to generate backstories. And that created a bunch of story by itself. I'm a huge proponent for not doing too much prep work until I have a party to work with, because I want to work the party's backstory into my plot line. So a huge amount of character dynamic and villains and plot hooks and stuff arose from that process. And I also stole an idea from Fate, from Spirit of the Century specifically. Spirit of the Century has one of the best character generation systems I've ever seen. Because aside from all the mechanical stuff, you also write the blurb on the back of your character's first novel.
Huh, that's cool.
So, right, which that's a great, what's the word I'm looking for? Not aesthetic, deceit, right? That's a great device. Right. So you write the blurb from your character, and this is backstory. So this is your character's first adventure. You know, will Dr. Cheesy Puffs overcome the ancient evil scientist and blah, 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 find out. And then you pass that blurb to the left, and the player on your left writes themselves a cameo in your first novel. And then you do it again. And that's how you create a party. Now everyone knows each other because you've crossed each other's paths before. It's one of my all-time favorite character generation conceits, and I use it whenever possible. So we combined that mechanic with Cyberpunk 2020's life path system. Essentially, everybody got to say, like, let's say somebody rolled and they said, I'm in debt. They found out that they were in debt to somebody. Each person had one card they could play to say, I'm going to meddle with that. I'm going to be involved in that debt. And here's how our characters are connected. And so that network of relationships not only avoids the you all meet in a tavern and you spend the first session fighting and not trusting each other problem, but it also generated a lot of plot ideas for me. So I took the skeleton that I already had of my ideas and I fleshed it out with all the stuff from their backstories. And it's been a lot of fun so far.
That's awesome. Do you have any plans for additional games, putting in other systems, anything like that in the near future?
I am developing a game for the Casters and Castles channel that's based off of a pulp adventure mod for 5th edition. So Indiana Jones, Golden Age comic books, The Phantom, The Shadow, The Green Hornet, The Maltese Falcon, just a huge kitchen sink of all these together. And we've got our cast. We haven't announced it yet because we're still getting everything together, working on art assets, etc. It is still 5th edition at its heart, but that's coming soon. That's in the near future. There is a sci-fi campaign I've run before that is one of my all-time favorites that I have considered running on Starfinder, though I'd be open to other sci-fi systems as well. And the reason it's my favorite is one of my favorites. The central conceit of that campaign is everybody wakes up in a cryotube with amnesia and no character sheet.
Huh.
Because it's not just, oh, I don't remember my name. It's you don't remember anything. You don't remember what you're good at. So before you even start leveling up, you have to experiment with the world to see if anything comes back to you. Like you might pick up a gun and you have no idea how to use this thing. And then you pick up a sword and you just, without even thinking of it, you instinctually go through this huge, you know, sword exercise and you realize, oh, I'm an incredibly deadly sword assassin and I didn't even know it. And that whole experience of the players starting out completely uncertain and then recognizing their own power and discovering their characters, I've run that a couple of times. It's been a hit every single time. I've never run it as content, and I want to do that at some point.
So when you're putting a campaign together, where do you like to look for inspiration and ideas and things of the sort?
Sometimes I will start with cast. I will start with my players and figure out what they like best. I'll obviously draw on media that I like. You know, the whole pulp era, cheesy, over-the-top stuff I really enjoy. And it's easy to tell stories in that environment.
Right.
The nice thing when you're pitching a campaign, you don't need to come up with too much. You just need to come up with something that excites you, something that gets you going that you want to explore. I've got years and years and years of campaigns that I've started or ideas I've come up with and never fleshed out. That's sort of my first place to draw from is, hey, I ran this, but it wasn't content at the time. This could make great content. Everyone had a lot of fun. Or I never got the chance to run this campaign, and I think it could be a really cool story. Let's do it. Sometimes the ideas come from other people. I'm also developing a magic school campaign, 5th edition probably. And it arose from a conversation I had where I was watching like a Matt Colville video or something where he talked about solo campaigns and side quests. And one of the models that he talked about was a character going to school, going through their training, going through their backstory, running that as a solo campaign. And then somebody who I'd worked with before in the industry said, if you ever run that, like a magic school solo campaign, please call me. I would like to do this. And I've sort of held on to that. And I don't know if it's been a year, but it's been a while, at least, you know, February, so about 10 years. And that just sort of stuck with me, that idea of the particular person who wanted to do this campaign would be great for it. I probably would do ensemble instead of single player. But that idea was just an idea that somebody else had, which was fairly interesting, but combined with the right person and the right level of interest. Now my brain's working through, okay, how could I create magical classes, like school classes and homework, that would be fun puzzles instead of come play D&D and do homework? Like, how could I build that into a mini game? And that's the design challenge that excites me. So that's another place where I sort of draw inspiration.
So that's really all the questions that I had. Is there anything else that you wanted to dive into, talk about, or cover?
Have you had episodes where you sort of talk about the difference between creating content for your table and creating content for content? And that whole difference?
No, I don't think we have made the leap into that yet. Like, we've skirted around it, but never directly just issued a subpoena for it.
So I feel like it's a topic unto itself. But I will say that when you're just playing tabletop with your friends, especially if you're running a sandbox style campaign, you could have a whole session, or like a West Marches campaign for the extreme version of a sandbox. You could have a whole campaign, a whole session where you get through two rooms, or where you spend most of it haggling in the marketplace, or doing downtime activities, prep work, and planning for the next adventure, because it's going to be a really big adventure. Or you can sort of start and stop wherever you need to. When you're making content, when you're doing actual play stuff, you have to create a dramatically compelling experience. Because it doesn't matter if your table enjoys spending the whole time drawing pictures of the stronghold that they just got and planning out, you know, the death maze and stuff like that. That's great for your friends, but your audience may not enjoy that. They'd want to consume that in some other content. So when you're making content, when you are writing a campaign to be streamed or recorded or whatever, you have to pay a lot more attention to dramatic convention. Every episode has to have, you know, it doesn't have to have like the 3-act, 5-act structure, right, or whatever, but something has to happen every single time. It has to be dramatic every single time. It has to be this ongoing story. It has to be a lot more, not episodic in terms of disconnected from each other, but every single session has to represent the structure of an episode with a rising tension, a climax, all that stuff. And I think that writing that way, while it is a restriction in some regards, because sometimes you do just want to, you know, chop up that dragon and make dragon burgers and spend the whole episode setting up your dragon burger restaurant or whatever it is. You just want that freedom. Writing for dramatic, you know, flow has made me a better DM, especially with my friends who have jobs and other commitments, right, and such, who don't spend all their off hours in our Discord server chatting about what they want to do next, who aren't hobbyists. They're people with other lives and other things going on. For them, having that structure, even though it's not streamed, where every single session they're going to sit down and it's going to be dramatic and it's going to be exciting, really, really works for them very well. And obviously, every DM wants to create some drama and excitement, but keeping that episodic flow in mind and having to write to that convention has made me a better DM, because it's made me better at ensuring that every encounter is entertaining and has dramatic conflict. It's an interesting exercise as a DM, and I think it's a different mindset that especially longtime hobbyists may not have.
It's interesting. I think it was Guy Raz, a legendary podcaster, he had a whole episode where he talked about, to be entertaining in an audio medium, which, you know, you can make a pretty good argument for audio medium in D&D content specifically, you have to have a change every 90 seconds, 90 seconds or less. So I think that kind of just fits within that, you know, Guy Razian kind of idea. You know, it's got to be dramatic. It's got to move. Can't be sitting here diving into rules every 5 seconds. So that's smart. I never really considered the dramatic tension, the dramatic flow, as you mentioned, when it comes to these shows before.
It's also one of the primary things that people should think about when they're like, we have fun at our table, we should stream our game, is that oftentimes as players, we enjoy or don't really hold on to the slow bits. For us, that's part of the joy, but it's a very different experience when it's not your character's life on the line about whether or not this fireball does or does not go around this barrier. You know what I mean?
Right. And I think it's a really good almost litmus test for actual plays in general, because there's a lot of actual plays they leave in the table talk, they leave in the rules talk, and it can get very slow and dry. So I think it's interesting. I'm going to be thinking about that for the next couple of days, especially as I dive into some other shows. All right, so we're starting to push on into 50 minutes. So I think we'll just kind of, we'll put a nice little pin in that, but I'd love to have you on the show in the future. You know, if any other projects or anything pop up on your end, bring it back on and we can talk through them. Maybe have a couple cast members on and chat with them as well.
That'd be fun. I really appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for taking the time. I know it's 2020 and we're all at home, but everybody's busier than ever. So thank you so much, Joe, for coming on and talking about Red Sky as well as Casters and Castles. And where can we find you on the social medias?
I've done a pretty good job of securing the Tormented by Gnomes brand on almost every single platform. What's my Twitch? Tormented by Gnomes. What's my YouTube? I don't actually use my YouTube at all. Don't even bother with that. Tormented by Gnomes and Casters and Castles. You search any major platform for those, you will find me and my content. I am primarily active as an individual on Twitter and on various Discord servers. And insofar as Casters and Castles content is concerned, there's a Discord that's got a very active community. We've got our Twitch, we've got our YouTube, where you can watch tons and tons of our VOD shows. And for Red Sky City, there's a subreddit, r/RedSkyCity. We show on twitch.tv/DNPeak, Delta November Peak, as in peeking around a corner. And that is Tuesday evenings. And you can find VODs of that show on Do Not Peak's YouTube as well.
Fantastic. Thank you again, Joe, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
My pleasure. Thank you, Devin. Take care.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Bardic Babble. Bardic Babble is a part of the Bard Podcast Network's family of shows. You can find Bardic Babble and all of our other shows at thebardpodcast.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for updates on new episodes. We can't wait to share the next story with you.